Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Tonight, we're trying something new. We'll call it Dueling Lawyers. We have two renowned attorneys who each specialize in gaming law, and we're going to try to get them to debate each other, even though I suspect that on many of the things we're going to ask them, they're going to agree with each other, in which case they may debate Richard and me. Professor I. Nelson Rose has been a professor of gaming law in several countries and regularly lectures and writes about the subject. His landmark book, Gambling and the Law, first came out almost 30 years ago. His most recent book, Gambling Law in a Nutshell, provides a concise overview of legal issues involving gambling around the world. I. Nelson Rose, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you for inviting me.
Pleasure to have you here. Bob Nersessian is largely known as a player's attorney. He has successfully litigated against casinos, gaming control boards. His book, Beat the Players, is must reading for Advantage players. He has a new book in the works, and which we'll definitely announce when it is finished. Bob Nersessian, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, Bob. And hello, Professor.
Have you guys met each other?
Yes, but I don't think we're... I think you were more right that we're not going to be debating that much.
I think so.
Well, fix it. All right, so here's the way it's going to work. Richard and I have a number of different questions. Each of them will give their opinion and on whatever the question is. If they agree, well, that's nice. We'll move on to the next question quickly. If they disagree, I hope, we might spend a little more time on the question. Richard and I both expect to learn a lot tonight. Maybe our listeners will too. First question, and we're going to let Bob Nersessian address it first. Several years ago, the Griffin Investigation Agency went bankrupt, partly with a push by you winning a case where blackjack player extraordinaire James Grosjean was your client. The Oregon Surveillance Network, OSN, now appears to be doing much the same thing as the Griffin Agency was doing before, namely identifying and publishing information about cheats and advantage players, not making a real distinction between those two. How is OSN able to do the same thing at the Griffin Agency, which the Griffin Agency was dead because they did it?
Well, I've seen OSN releases, and I got to disagree with you on one thing.
Okay.
Right up front, Bob, and they are not doing the same thing. They're doing it quite differently. While there may be an occasional error in their workup as to who's affiliated with whom, et cetera, which was rampant in Griffin as came out in that trial, the big difference is OSN is not identifying people as cheaters. And in fact, they seem very circumspect in putting the word cheater in there. And to go after one of these publications for defamation, you have to have some defamation. And they seem to be working overtime in reporting and not making things up or exaggerating. In fact, from what I've seen of OSN, I've only seen them call somebody a cheater who was not a cheater on one occasion, arguably not a cheater. And other than that, and he's considering litigation, but it's pretty hard to even find the word cheater in there.
What about... I thought that there were very strict restrictions about credit reporting. And so what about the fact that they are distributing people's social security numbers, you know, driver's license numbers, things like that? Are there no is there no sort of legal boundaries they have to abide by in regards to that?
I personally think that there are some legal boundaries, and if the test case shows up in my office with somebody who's willing to pay the $500 an hour, we'll take it to the wall. But
that was pretty clear.
But as a general rule, there's no upside to that litigation because you're going to have a hard time proving the damages. And also you have to make new law because courts in the past have ruled that under the common interest privilege and some other things, organizations like OSN or Griffin in similar circumstances where they didn't tag somebody as a criminal was able to bypass or get out of litigation. I think until we won the Griffin case, Griffin had gone 13-0 in defamation suits. So they have protections out there, and these organizations are very skilled at knowing how to use them.
All right, Professor Rose, we've kind of had two related questions for Bob. Do you have anything to say on either or both?
Oh, well, obviously Bob is completely wrong.
Oh, good, good. I like this show already.
No, I mean, he litigated the case. He actually is the one who brought the defamation case against Griffin. So, you know, there's a big difference between issuing information about a person and making, as Bob showed, what Griffin was doing was spreading false information about card counters and calling them cheats. That's where the defamation came in. If you're spreading, you know, there's a few defenses to defamation, such as that it's true. Also, another would be, well, in fact, saying somebody is an advantage player is not saying that they are a crook. And so you get somebody who really is an advantage player, and they give that information to the casinos. This happens to be all in Oregon. It's hard to see why there's going to be a cause of action. The second, the privacy issue, yeah, there are privacy rights, but I would follow his recommendation in terms of before anybody wants to go with a lawsuit, they better think it through real clearly, thinking it's going to cost a lot in time and money and energy, and you really have to be wronged before you get yourself into the American legal system.
As an advantage player, are you willing to do it for $4.50 an hour? Sorry.
If you're asking me,
yes.
Actually, my regular rate is $800 an hour.
Ah, so we're better off with Narcissian here.
Mine just increased to $650.
All right. This is not the level of debate I was hoping for tonight. Let's change subjects. Online gaming. Sheldon Adelson has been doing his damnedest to prevent it, but online gaming is gradually growing from state to state. The biggest state population-wise is California, and the subject is actively being debated there. If and when it comes online there is anybody's guess. In the meantime, however, a tiny Indian tribe in San Diego County, which is as far south as you can get in California, Santa Isabel, is opening up an online poker room called PrivateTable.com that's going live this week. They claim it's Class 2 gaming and is allowed under the current compact with the state. So, Professor Rose, you're based in California. Yes. What do you think is going to happen with Santa Isabel?
Well, one of their main advisors is the co-author of my books on internet gaming, so Marty Owens, and so I'm a little reluctant to criticize the tribe, but I still have not really seen a legal analysis that says yes, you can, if you are a federally recognized tribe, take wagers from off the reservation. I testified a couple years ago before the U.S. Senate Indian Affairs Committee on the issue of what tribes could do off reservation. It was what actually happened. It was the Department of Justice had made its Christmas present to the states that said, okay, the main federal statute, the Wire Act, only applies to sports betting, which meant the states can do anything they want. Well, the question is, what is that impact does that have on the tribes? And when I started doing the research, I thought, well, it'll be like the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, which it actually will looks bad, but it'll open the door to tremendous possibilities for tribes. But the extensive research that I did on it says, yeah, the tribes are, they're domestic nations, they're sovereign governments, but they have the power to govern only on their own land. It would be similar to someone licensed by Mexico being in California and saying, okay, I'm going to be doing internet poker in California. Well, yeah, you can do it in Mexico if you're licensed by Mexico, but that doesn't mean you can do it in California. And so I think it's not going to succeed if the state or federal government ever decides to do anything about it.
Bob Nersessian, do you have an opinion on this?
I completely agree with Professor Rose yet again.
This is no fun.
No, I understand. He hit exactly my position in the very last thing he said. Unless you get the Attorney General of California or the U.S. Attorney General to decide this isn't going to happen, then there's nobody to stop it. And as to them being able to do it, we're back to, if just to throw out an anecdote, people might remember, no, I'm even too young to remember, but Wolfman Jack got started in a Mexican radio station just across the border in Texas that had power four times greater than the most powerful AM radio station in America. Well, he took advertising from everybody all over the world, and he was in Mexico, and these guys are on an Indian reservation, and they may just be out of reach. So it's probably going to go forward until such time as, with what happened with the Westinghouse broadcast system down there, it breaks and nobody knows how to fix it. So I think we're going to see the same thing with this Indian gaming. It's going to continue to grow and grow and grow until, and here's a long-term prediction from me, sooner or later, the United States Supreme Court is going to approach Indian reservations and change the anomaly of immunity so that they are brought more in line with the regulations that the rest of the country is dealing with. And at that point, they may have to stop even if the Attorney General doesn't do anything. Or it's going to come around and internet gaming is going to expand into the private commercial areas in the states, regardless of Indian gaming.
Professor Rose, you were saying something?
Yes, I was going to say I actually have a disagreement with Bob.
Hot damn. Okay, we're getting somewhere.
It may be a minor issue. First, let me say I agree with him on that the U.S. Supreme Court is eventually going to take away sovereign tribal immunity. I do a monthly column called Gambling and a Law, and I did one a few years ago, and I've actually expanded it into a paper where the tribes took a tribe got taken to court when it refused to pay back a loan for something that didn't even have anything to do with the reservation. It was a promissory note for some construction off reservation. Goes up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court says, we think this whole area of tribal immunity is a mistake, and it was a mistake. And we can get into the law part, but it was a startling decision. And what was most startling about it was the dissent, the minority said, we think it's a mistake too, and we think we, the Supreme Court, should get rid of it right now. The majority of the Supreme Court says we think it's a mistake, but it's been around for so long that Congress should get rid of it. In other words, tribes have no friends whatsoever on the U.S. Supreme Court, and when the proper case gets there, they may get rid of tribal sovereign immunity. And by the way, I think the case will be something like payday loans, where tribes are getting themselves affiliated with lenders who are charging as much as 1,000% a year on short-term loans. The point where I disagree with Bob is whether anybody can do it. I was hired a few years ago by the state Senate in Florida, which had a dispute with the governor over a compact with the Seminole tribes, which at the time allowed the Seminoles to have slot machines and blackjack when no one else in the state could have blackjack. And they asked me, the Senate, which opposed the governor, was asking me, well, what could the government of Florida do? And it turns out the government and other people can do a lot outside of going on the reservation. So, for example, anybody who is supplying a form, any company, say, that is supplying a form of gambling that exists on Indian land but is technically illegal is committing all sorts of major felonies. And so it might be possible, again, if there's a will, to go after the suppliers, say. You could also possibly get a private lawyer who could go after maybe even the players, but it's probably not worth doing, not in California.
You know, while we're talking about California and Indian reservations, there was we've talked to Bob on the show a number of times about, you know, what recourse do you have if you get, you know, basically abused on an Indian reservation by security for counting right. cards or something. And, you know, Bob's answer was sort of like your SOL. But there was a recent case where in California, a person was detained, and rather than trying to sue the tribe, which we know does not have much success, they sued the individuals, the security guards,
right.
and apparently were able to get a pretty reasonable settlement. So I'm wondering what you think about this tactic of going after the individuals rather than suing the casino or the tribe itself.
Well, you could. It's similar to the idea of police misconduct, where you can go after, based on a U.S. Supreme Court case, you can sue individual police, even, well, in fact, it's the Bivens case. You can go after individual federal narcotics officers. The problem is cops don't make a whole lot of money, and security guards and even the managers of tribal casinos probably don't make enough money to make it worthwhile. But you might be able to go after a private management company like Harrah's, which is now Caesars Entertainment, is involved with a lot of tribal casinos, and if something drastically goes wrong that they're responsible for, it's very possible that they could be sued even if all the events took place on Indian land at a recognized legal tribal casino. It's possible. The practice, though, because I've worked a lot with governments, including tribes and states as well, is the smart thing for states to do is to always require that tribes have a lot of insurance and that they agree to waive the tribal immunity for everything that they are being insured against.
Fat chance.
So, yeah, I'm with Bob on that one.
Have literally died. and on Indian land and found out, nope, you can't sue a tribe.
I don't understand why the states are entering into these compacts that allow this broad immunity when insurance is available, and by the simple expedient of entering into a contract that brings the state law on tort applicable to the casino, the Indian casino, and grants state jurisdiction, isn't used more often or even used at all. And Richard, on your issue, I would point out that we've already done what you're talking about. It's a published opinion in Westlaw. The case is Pister versus Garcia out of the Arizona District of Arizona. It's currently in front of the Ninth Circuit.
That's impressive that he and that you have all that at the tip of your fingers.
It's my case. How wouldn't I?
Not so impressive. Go ahead.
It's currently in front of the Ninth Circuit. There is some question, as I've always been of the opinion, for instance, with Harrah's Rincon, that you can sue Harrah's when those people do something wrong. There is a doctrine called the Doctrine of Exclusivity, which may apply, which would require you to sue in an Indian court. But I think there's an exception or two that applies very strongly to Harrah's in that circumstance. And I do believe that Harrah's is putting them, or in this case, Caesars Entertainment, severely puts themselves at risk when they partner with Indian casinos, because we all know that those guys can be loose cannons. And now they're managing, and they have the management contract, and I think they're going to find themselves behind some strong and heady judgments in the future because of that practice.
Well, I think that Harrah's knows that, and they're trying to be careful. I'm thinking of the cases where people had said they won, say, $1 million jackpot. I think this was an Arizona case where the tribe said no, they didn't, and it turned out that it was the manager of the casino ended up killing himself. But you know, it was a very strange situation the way it developed. But the tribe never paid, but Harrah's did, to get rid of the bad publicity. Turns out that it probably was a malfunction, that they probably didn't have to pay, but rather than risk the terrible bad publicity and potential going to a lawsuit and getting hit with punitive damages, they decided to pay up. To answer Bob's the first comment, though, which I think is very good, I think we're going to spend this show basically complimenting each other.
You look better than I do.
You know, the question is, why don't the compacts protect players? And I think it's both political incompetence and political cowardice, where, and again, the tribes usually have insurance. Even tribal courts do try to do the right thing. But when you're an outsider going on their land and something bad happens, and it doesn't need to be a life-threatening injury, it could be what looks like something good, like winning a lot of money, but then the tribe refuses to pay, you should have a recourse. And the worst example was Governor Gray Davis in California. When he wrote the compacts, it expressly says that no one can sue a tribe or the state for money involving anything involving gaming on Indian land. And that's just, you know, Gray Davis was corrupt and incompetent.
I'm going to tip my hat to Professor Rose. He obviously has bigger cojones than I do.
My comment on that is suing Harrah. I'm not sure Harrah's has any more money than these security guards. So.
And you as well, Bob.
All right. So let's change subjects a little bit. Actually, I'm finding out that whether they agree with each other or not, we're learning something in the process, and that was actually the big goal here. The next question relates to slot clubs. Let's say I have $100 in free slot play sent to me by a casino in Atlantic City. I live in Nevada. It's too expensive for me to fly there to collect the money, but I have a friend who goes there all the time. So I offer him a deal where he collects all the money he can get out of it, mails me $75, and he keeps whatever's left over. Good for him, good for me. Presumably, the casino doesn't want this because they're offering me the money in the hopes that I'm going to come in and gamble and lose a bunch. Is the casino within its rights to kick both me and my friend out of the slot club if they catch us? Related question, can they back room him? Related question, although I arbitrarily said Atlantic City, would the answer be different if it was Missouri, Mississippi, Iowa, or some other place? Bob, you want to handle this one first?
Oh, okay. You have seven questions, sir.
Six. I'm pretty sure it's six.
All right. But the one thing I want to point out is you're actually asking one question about apples and one question about oranges.
Okay.
The question about apples is, can they throw us out? The answer in most jurisdictions, exceptions being California, Missouri, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey, is yeah, they can throw you out, because as of right now in all the other jurisdictions, they can pretty well throw you out if they don't like how you part your hair. So if they don't like how you're playing the game, the general rule, the majority rule, would be that they can throw you out. Next, what you're really asking is, can you cash comps through an undisclosed agent? My general opinion, or an agent who is not disclosing that they are operating as an agent, but is operating as an agent, not to get in all the agency and partnership technicalities, but the law would say yes. Unfortunately, the states are saying no. There are currently, as I understand, on the same types of things you're talking about, I think I'm familiar with three criminal prosecutions that are ongoing at this time. I don't think they're going to be successful, or if they are successful, it's gamblers running away scared and just capitulating. But they're even charging computer fraud in one of the states over this stuff. And
the players are charging the casinos with computer
fraud? No, the casinos are charging the player with using a computer. The federal and state computer hacking laws, by saying you're in here under false pretenses, we're going to get you on the computer felonies now. I know. You can try and I see your eyes, Bob. You can try and connect this up. It really doesn't connect up, but there's not a logic. There's not a lot of logic to a lot of prosecutors.
Professor Rose, how do you feel about this central subject?
Again,
I know Nersessian's like right.
We're mostly agreeing, but I would I'll try to make a little disagreement in here, which is,
thank you.
I think it might even be broader than what Bob said, like New Jersey, where they cannot kick you out for counting cards, but they can take countermeasures. And even without the countermeasures, what we're dealing with here is using a slot club, signing up for it, and then violating the terms of the agreement, which says that the individual who signs up for the slot club is the one who has to come there and pick up the bonuses that the person got from being part of the slot club. We have to keep remembering that gambling is a privilege, not a right, which means that the states pretty much have the right to do anything they want, but also if you aren't fulfilling all of the obligations, then, yeah, they've got the right to say, I'm sorry, you're violating the terms of our agreement, and you can, if I was Harrah's, what I would do, or one of the other slot clubs, I'd probably put in the terms and conditions, put in the agreement that not only does the person have to show up, but if they use an undisclosed agent who hasn't been approved by the casino, then they understand that they will not be permitted to enter the casino again, period. And I think that would be an enforceable contract.
I don't know where we're disagreeing, Professor.
Oh, we're not. I guess. Oh, just because I thought you had said in some of the states like New Jersey,
okay,
they probably have to let you in.
Well, that was the apples and oranges part. It's just the apples part where they can throw you out for any or no reason, so we don't even reach that second analysis that you just went to. I would agree that if you are doing that and they have the rules out there, the gambler is the one that's behind the eight ball on those rules. Now, I actually have some pending cases that are on point with what we're talking about, and these are cases where players were taken into custody and held, and police were called, and then they were released, and there were no rules that prohibited the activity, or the rules did not prohibit agent redemption.
Right.
Yes, these guys can write the rules. And this is obviously, I'm a guy on a mission more so than you are. Casinos can write the rules. And my biggest complaint is they fail to write those rules. They go out there, they make up the rules as they go along, and then they say, these are our rules, and you know what? Yeah, we can throw you in handcuffs, and we can call the cops, and in many instances, we can get the cops to write you a ticket or take you to jail, and only later will it be figured out that, hey, wait, there is no such rule, and yes, they did just make it up. So write the rules on the front side, and if there isn't a rule, then live up to what the law says. That's all that I ever ask, and that's all that they should be doing. But they don't write the rules. They make them up as they go along.
Yeah, and here's one where we're definitely going to agree. That is what so many casinos do, and it's so dumb. I got called by people. One guy had the equivalent of like $20,000 worth of points, and they realized they had made a horrible mistake with their point system, that it was too easy to get the points. So rather than say, wow, we made a mistake, they said, sorry, we're not going to redeem it. Well, now, and I think kick him out, now it's the casino that is violating the agreement, because the player did everything that he was supposed to do, including he actually did show up himself, and so they made up a rule afterwards. I think the Nevada regulators did tell the casino, I don't want to say that they, I was going to say they told the casinos, hey, you really have to pay up, you know, but the regulators tend to be too pro-business, pro-casino in Nevada, so I don't want to say for sure that they did.
I think I know the case you're talking about, and I think they did tell the casino to pay up, but it took a lot, and the first agent to investigate said, no, you don't have to pay.
Right.
And moreover, with the first – actually – it's even worse. The first agent to investigate said, this is outside of our jurisdiction. We don't deal with promotions like this, which is patently false.
Right.
And then that went up the ladder to the next level of investigation. Then it was investigated with a no pay. And then it went in front. Then it went to the next level where somebody finally said, wait a minute. The paper says this is the deal. Live by your deal.
Right.
So... but, yeah, it did take a few steps, and I am oftentimes surprised by I run into all different types of gaming agents, and there are plenty of them out there that are absolutely objective. But you will run into the occasional one who has the idea that his job is to make sure that a casino in Nevada never loses a penny. Actually, I've run into the same agents vis-a-vis New Jersey as well. And it's just scary that public officers, people working for the citizenry, would have such ideas. And especially in Nevada, I think when that happens, there is a complete loss of the idea of how these things become known and progress through society such that the next time somebody decides to go to a casino, they're going to fly to Puerto Rico rather than come to Las Vegas. And I think our gaming board and our agents have got to start becoming much more player friendly and recognize that it does affect the tourism at all levels.
All right, yeah. You guys keep agreeing with each other, so I'm going to hope to fix you by asking another question. On several occasions on this show, we've asked Bob Nersesian about the legality of placing a strategy card on an iPhone and reading that in a casino, using this iPhone as a reading device rather than a calculating device. On each of these occasions, he has indicated that he believes this is probably against Nevada's device law, and he suggests players not do this. Professor Rose, several of our listeners really, really, really would like Nersesian to be wrong on this. Do you have an opinion on whether reading a document off an iPhone violates the device law in Nevada or elsewhere?
Well, I'm sorry to say I think that Bob is right.
Damn, this is awful. All right, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, sorry. I mean, you know, and actually people can check it themselves that it's Nevada Revised Statute 465.075, use or possession of device software or hardware to obtain advantage at playing game prohibited. And when you read it, it basically says it's got some pretty specific examples besides really broad language that says you can't use a computer to not only to keep track but to even tell you the strategy. And there's enough language in there that I think covers it. And again, we are dealing with a privilege, not a right. There is no constitutional right to gamble. And so if they put restrictions on which make sense, in this case, it's not the casino. It's actually the legislature of the state of Nevada. And by the way, in Nevada, the Supreme Court has said you have no constitutional rights. There are no federal or state constitutional rights in Nevada except for what the state legislature has given you. Now, other states say, wait a minute, that's going way too far. But the legislature passes this statute. It's rational. We may not like it, but it's at least kind of makes sense why they're doing it. And therefore, you can't challenge it as being unconstitutional.
What about if it's a piece of paper instead of an iPhone?
It doesn't matter if you're keeping track of things. Yes, I know what you're going to say immediately is the casinos themselves give out the smart cards, and in roulette they keep track for you of which color ball or baccarat has the player or the banker won. I understand all that, but there is an out that the statute says if it's been approved by the regulator, then you can do it.
So. I might now disagree a little bit.
All right.
Well, it's not a big one, Bob. I don't think a sheet of paper is a device.
If you're what if you're keeping track on your sheet of paper?
Okay, I have actually had that one in front of the Nevada Gaming Control Board on a roulette play, and they said that was perfectly okay as long as it's a piece of paper.
Interesting. So would they let you keep track of everything at every card that is being played at blackjack?
Yeah, but then the question becomes, would the casino let you, number two, and then number three, topping it all off, who the heck can write that quick?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, because you don't need to write the actual cards. You know, you go to one of the simplified card counting systems, and just keep track high, low, aces, and fives.
So little check marks on your paper?
Yeah.
You know, these guys who need to do that and can't do it all in their head can still use the knuckle system.
Yeah.
So it's not – I don't see that being material. And then on the games where it does turn out to be material, except that you can't really gain an edge, allegedly, roulette and baccarat, they hand you the paper to do it with. So,
yeah. Oh, so can I ask a question? How do you think of, what do you think of edge sorting?
I've already gotten in trouble with on this game or in this.
Actually, I'm really glad you brought that up because you two guys disagree on this topic, and we have had listeners who want to hear your opinions. So,
I think edge sorting is likely cheating.
Oh, see, and I think it's up to the casino to, particularly where it violates its own rules.
Well, can I give a caveat as well as I say that? Okay, when you read the recent Ivy thing, and about that one, I don't think that one's cheating. Okay? My distinction is when the players put hands on the cards and set them, it is the players who are actually affecting the game and not the casino, and that's what takes it over the edge.
I'm afraid we're not disagreeing. I got called in actually as an expert witness on a case where there was alleged to be cheating, and I figured, okay, I've done this enough, I can probably figure this out. And one of the first things, they had seized the decks of cards, it was a shoe, and one of the first things I looked for was the pattern, because it was the diamond shape that went all the way to the edge of the card, and there were full diamonds on some cards and half diamonds on others. Turns out they were not correlated at all with anything that I could tell. But if, and the reason, in fact, the cards had been marked, I brought in an ultraviolet lamp, and wham, you could see three lines on every 10 card. And once you knew where to look, you could see it without the ultraviolet light. But the edge sorting, if a player simply notices that there are, and it would be hard with a shoe, but imagine with a single deck of cards, and you notice, gee, there's a couple of the aces have, or all four of the aces have full diamond pattern in the corners, then I don't think that's cheating if the casino isn't being smart enough and the card manufacturers aren't being smart enough to use patterns where that's impossible.
So you're both saying that if the players are turning the cards, you think it's illegal, but if the players are not turning the cards, then it would not be illegal.
Well, you got to be careful. That's not necessarily the only thing that happened in the Phil Ivey case, where the casino was violating its own rules, for example, by not turning the cards when they were shuffling to make them, and not, there were other things.
They were failing a kill shuffle.
If you turn a card and it turns out to be, therefore you can read it from the back, that's like marking the back of a card.
So you can turn the cards as long as you don't pay attention to how you're turning them. Then it's legal. But if you use your eyes and your brain when you're turning them, then it is illegal.
That's a false distinction, Richard.
How so?
How so? Because he has... I'm trying to think of the logic...
Well, the law of logic
that says that that doesn't work. And
imagine you're playing at a casino, and your hands have dirt on them, and so the dirt marks end up on the back of the cards, and the casino isn't smart enough to throw out the cards, and so they now have dirt marks on them, but you have not marked them intentionally. They have gotten marked through the action of the player. Now, if he's not paying attention to what those marks mean, I don't see there's any accusation of cheating going on. And then, if you're simply getting cards dirty, and then once they're dirty, you look at them and go, wow, or let's say that you come upon a deck of cards and you realize I can read these from behind because of, they're so old and used. Well, you know, I guess in my position, I'd say go for it.
What Professor Rose has just described is the Ace 4 conundrum, when they would keep the cards out all day and the aces are double checked in the window.
Yeah.
And get hit two or three times where the rest of the cards are only getting hit once. So you have damaged corners on aces and fours, and now you know them, and you play that damage. That is certainly not cheating in any sense of the word, but you didn't set those cards, and you didn't make that damage. The casino did.
Right. And you know what they do in Macau, where the players love to squeeze the cards but for security, they use the cards once and throw them away, destroy them. So if the casino doesn't like this, there are a lot of countermeasures that can be taken.
Just for some grins here, though, they only sweat the cards at the high-level Baccarat games, not the mini-bac, because they're not allowed to touch them. So the casino is only throwing away an entire shoe of cards after they've already had about $300,000 in action on them.
Right.
Maybe they can afford a deck. All right. Yeah. We have about 5 minutes for this one.
Wow.
Case A, I was invited to play in a casino and receive certain benefits. I do. Nothing particularly untoward happens at the casino. But when I get home, there's a certified letter telling me I'm no longer welcome. And if I set foot on that property, I'll be arrested. Case B. I decide I don't like my neighbor's high karate aftershave and his polyester Hawaiian shirts. So I send him a certified letter telling him he is no longer welcome at my house, and if he sets foot on my property, I will have him arrested. How are these cases different?
Let me start by saying I don't see that they are different, but I think you're not going to like the fact in what way they're not different. They're not different because, in fact, yes, you do have the right to have him arrested. The basic law for casinos kicking people out comes from the old English doctrine that a man's home is his castle. Then it turned out to be, okay, a man's office is his castle, and obviously a woman's home is her castle. And then there's some exceptions for, you know, like inns, where you need to stay for safety. But so sometimes they can't kick you out of the hotel, but they could kick you out of the casino. But the bottom line is, unless there's a special rule like New Jersey has, because there's so much government regulation, casinos do have the right to kick you out for any reason or no reason at all. They do have the right to then have you arrested as a defiant trespasser if you refuse to leave or you come back after you've been kicked out. But you've got that same right with your neighbor. Somebody comes onto your land and you do not want them on your land because you don't like the way they look, you can have them kicked off and arrested.
Wow, it took a long time and time's almost up, and you have reached an absolute disagreement between me and Professor Rose.
Can we extend this show a little bit? I want to hear this.
Well, here's the deal. First of all, I would cite to a book entitled Blackjack in the Law.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. I think one of the authors is on with us right now. And the section where that very right is discussed mentions specifically that idea that a casino has a right to throw out anyone for any or no reason has not been decided in Nevada. And I agree with what Professor Rose and Robert Loeb wrote, and it hasn't been decided in Nevada. Now, there are some crazy cases out there, like Franceschi versus somebody where Judge Hunt, for example, citing four cases disingenuously, held that a casino has such right, but Judge Hunt is a federal judge of first-level jurisdiction and is no different than any other trial judge in our state, and his opinion does not carry weight until the Nevada Supreme Court weighs in. So, with the Franceschi case and others, the general inclination is to go the way that Professor Rose has, But Professor Rose and Attorney Loeb wrote in their very book that considering modern trends and the way casinos work in Nevada, it may well go the other way in Nevada when that issue is decided. Specifically, we have, and New Jersey's rule is twofold. One, the overregulation says that you can't throw them out, but they do also recognize a historic common law rule that says you cannot throw people out of a place of public accommodation. And as of right now today, in California, you can't throw people out of a place of public accommodation, so you could not put them out of a casino under that rule. That would be Cox, Professor Rose, if you want to double check it, which Cox says that the UNRRA Act is specifically a codification of the common law, and therefore to places of that are generally open to the public, it would be the common law that applies and that says that you can't throw people out, California's common law. And then there's Missouri, which is by regulation, Pennsylvania, which is by constitution, and New Jersey, and Missouri also has a case that says that you can't throw out absent good cause. It's not a casino case, it's a theater case. So there are jurisdictions where that rule does not apply that strongly, and Nevada has not decided the issue.
Before I hear your response, Professor Rose, I want to mention that your website is gamblingandthelaw.com. Is that the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yes, through the website, and they can send me an email, which is the easiest.
And that is rose@sprintmail.com?
rose@sprintmail.com, and the website is gamblingandthelaw.com. All four words spelled out in full and run together.
Uh-huh.
The short answer, I mean, obviously, Bob, is...
You have
is
one
right.
minute for your short answer.
The short answer is... You have to check out the laws of each jurisdiction. There's a wonderful case where the racetrack bettors were kicked out because they thought the guy was a bookie. He wasn't, but the court said, sorry, you have the right to kick the person out. And it's different if you get something like the UNRU Act or some statute that says you can't discriminate on the basis of race or religion or something like that. I think the courts are going to go along with the idea that a casino is a private business and it has the right to say no shirts, no shoes, no card counting, no business.
Professor Rose, I just want to say it was great being on with you and I had a ball.
All right.
Oh, me too.
And good. We actually have a lot more questions, so we're going to have to do this again. Whether you disagreed or not, it was really fun for me. I learned a lot, and I thank you both.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Richard. And everybody, go out and hit lots of royal flushes. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.